You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello and welcome to Alchemy 101, the show where we explore the golden path of transformation and aim to mine a few nuggets that can support us in living in line with nature in a way that's true to our nature, even though sometimes it might feel counterintuitive, just like the nightingale, a bird that sings out in the dark. I'm JJ, otherwise known as the Practical Alchemist, and I'm delighted that you could join me today. You know, I'm no medical doctor or even an anatomy specialist, but there aren't that many systems in our bodies that I haven't heard about. Today, we're going to hear about one of them. It's the glymphatic system. Yes, you heard that right. It starts with a G and it's separate to the lymphatic system, if I understand it correctly. I think I do. This system is crucial to the healthy functioning of our brain. So who better to tell us more about it than one of the world's foremost experts in brain health? Regular listeners to the show might have guessed by now, I'm very pleased to welcome back Professor James Goodwin to explain all. James is Director of Science and Research Impact at the Brain Health Network, and his book, Supercharge Your Brain, is an excellent source of information for all of us who are keen to keep our brains healthy. I started off by asking James if he could tell us just how the lymphatic system and the glymphatic systems differ.
The lymphatic system, if we can start with that,
yeah,
is a fairly widely understood system of drainage, which is important for the cardiovascular system, and I'll say more about that later. The glymphatic system is a variant of the lymphatic system in the brain. Its importance, though, is immense, and it came to notoriety in the press because scientists had drawn an implication for Alzheimer's disease from the normal working of this newly found drainage system in the brain. Glymphatic system is important if you're interested in Alzheimer's disease.
Yeah, so what is it about the glymphatic system? Well, the lymphatic system is the way our body drains fluids, toxins, all sorts of things out of our body. So what about then the glymphatic system? Is that what drains all the rubbish out of our brains? Is that what we're saying?
In a word, you could probably sum it up fairly like that.
Yes, yeah.
What I'd like to do, JJ, is to maybe throw some light onto the lymphatic system.
So, yeah, let's start.
We take the establishment of the lymphatic system as part of our anatomy and physiology largely for granted, but it's taken thousands of years to identify the detail of it and how it works. Now, I'm very often asked the question, the arteries take their blood into the tissues, fluids leave the blood and go into the cells to take nutrients to the cells and to remove waste products. That's essentially it. And then they drain out through the veins. So what's all this about a lymphatic system? Why do we need that?
Yeah.
Why has evolution and human physiology seen it necessary to have, if you like, a second drainage system? And the answer is that the amount of fluid in the tissues is incapable of being drained by the veins alone. When the blood gets to the tissues in the first place, all the fluid leaves apart from enough to carry the big proteins. So everything leaves in and goes into the tissues, as it should, just leaving behind large proteins and water. And then the capillaries drain our tissues and go into the veins. But it's incapable of taking the volume of fluid. Water is made in the tissues as well as being supplied to it by the blood, for a start. So the venous system is incapable of doing that. And there's this shadowy, and it is almost invisible system called the lymphatic system, which drains them. Now, how does that work? Well, the passage of water from the tissues into the veins is done by that wonderful process, osmosis. That's one of the restricting factors. It's slow. So you still get a buildup of water in the tissues if you'd relied upon the veins alone. The lymphatic system, the fluid can enter through the pores of the lymphatic system, tiny little invisible, almost invisible drainage vessels, blindly ending vessels. And the fluid in the lymphatic system passes through some choke points, which early anatomists like Galen and Vesalius discovered. And these choke points are called lymph nodes. And the lymph nodes are part of the immune system. They make the defensive cells, which are called B cells and T cells. And as the fluid leaves the tissues, it goes through the choke points and it gets cleaned up, if you like. That's a good way to say it. And eventually from the upper limbs and the lower limbs, all the lymphatic fluid goes into the thoracic duct, which is a huge canal which passes right from the abdomen through the chest, and it goes just underneath the collarbone on the right-hand side of the body and empties into the subclavian vein, and that's how it gets back to the bloodstream. Now, I always remember a story by Jonathan Miller. Your listeners may know of Jonathan Miller. He's a polymath. He's a physician, and he was prominent in the arts and an actor and a theatre director. And I saw him once being interviewed by Parkinson. That dates me a bit, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. Michael Parkinson hasn't been doing any chat shows for a long time. Yeah.
But he talked to Jonathan Miller about his early experiences and said, did you ever work as a doctor? And he said, well, when I left medical school, he went on the VSO scheme, Voluntary Service Overseas scheme. And he said, I went to West Africa. And there I went to the villages and I was the only doctor for hundreds of miles. And of course, everybody would flood to the village when word got around that there was a doctor there. And he said, I had one client came in. He was a fairly young man in his early 30s, and he'd walked 20 miles with his swollen testicles in a wheelbarrow.
I think I've heard this story. I remember that story.
Filariasis.
Carry on.
Is what the guy had. He had a parasitic infection of tiny worms in the bloodstream, which resulted from an insect bite. In this particular man, they'd infested the lymph nodes, which were receiving drainage from the genitals. And so the fluid just built up. Nowhere to go. The veins couldn't drain it adequately, which is what we just said. So the fluid built up, and the guy's scrotum and testicles just was in naught the size of melons. So Jonathan Miller relates how he prescribed medication for this guy. And when he went back a few months later, the guy was there waiting for him, perfectly normal.
No, I do seem to remember. I must have watched the same show on television. Yeah. I do seem to remember that story. It kind of sticks in your mind.
Yeah, it does stick in your mind. But it illustrates very well the fundamental importance of the drainage system. Another condition which is found commonly in lymphedema cases, which is where the lymphatic system isn't draining properly for many different reasons, is elephantiasis.
I was going to just ask you about that. Yeah.
Yeah, where the limbs in particular fill up with fluid, the skin folds greatly, and your limbs just look like the arms and legs or the limbs of an elephant,
Yeah.
elephantiasis. Mm. It is extremely important. I also remember where the drainage system wasn't working in a child is another anecdote I heard about West Africa. And the doctor there went to treat the son of a chief, and the chief said to him, "If you hurt my son, I'll kill you." So he's working on that principle. And the child was unconscious and there was swelling on the brain. And the water from the brain wasn't leaving adequately through either through the veins or the lymph system. So he shaved the little boy's head, used iodine to sterilize the skin, took out a Black & Decker hand drill and drilled a hole through the child's skull. And of course, they numbed, I think, the surface of the scalp. And he said, the drill went through, I pulled it out, and this jet of water came streaking into the air. Then the kid sat up and looked around, perfectly normal. So the hydrodynamics of our body, that's the balance of flow of fluids, is really, really important. And if the cardiovascular system and the lymphatic system are not working correctly, you get terrible complications. So that's the lymphatic system. A way in which we can see the lymphatic system is if you get an infected cut, usually on the hand or the fingers, and you see lines appearing in the finger. Red lines appearing, that's the infected and inflamed lymphatic system.
Right.
See them in the wrist as well, where in the surface. So you see these lines, and then you know then the infection is creeping down the lymph glands. It's really got a grip on you. Some of your listeners may have experienced.
So that's then the lymphatic system. So why do we need something called the glymphatic system? What's the difference? Because, you know, doesn't it actually help the brain as well? Because, you know, you're talking there about a child who had a swelling, right?
They had internal high fluid pressure in the brain.
I don't
know the medical term for that.
No, that's fine. But yeah, so you would have thought that would have been a lymphatic issue. And is it? And if it's not, you know, what's
the difference? A lymphatic or a venous.
Yeah. So what's the difference between the lymphatic and the glymphatic system then in that case?
There have been various theories over decades of how fluid drains from the brain, and of course the brain is the most important structure in the body, and it's highly protected, and its optimal conditions involve the flow of blood into the brain and the adequate drainage of fluid, because the same physiology applies in the brain. The arteries divide many times into arterioles. They penetrate what we call the parenchyma of the brain cells of all kinds. And then they leak fluid around the cells. They bathe the neurons and the supporting cells. And then it has to drain out again. And we know that there are many, many lymph nodes in the head and neck. Any infection in there, you can feel those lymph nodes.
Yeah.
So who first identified the lymph nodes in the neck and head? And I think that was a long time ago. So it's been fundamentally understood. I think it was Vesalius in his book called Fabrica, Structure of the Human Body in 7 Volumes, first person to present a detailed system of the anatomy of the body. In Greek times, it was deemed inappropriate to desecrate the human body by a dissection.
Mm-hmm.
So all the knowledge of anatomy was imputed to humans from dissections of animals. Mm. That's how it was done. Until Leonardo da Vinci, he dissected until he was forbade doing it by, I believe it was the Holy Roman Emperor or the Pope himself. And then in 1543, Vesalius, who was a radical and very independently minded, strong-minded physician in Belgium, started to dissect publicly. There's a phenomenal story where the only bodies they could get hold of were executed criminals, normally by hanging. So they'd wait until the crowd dissipated into the early hours of the morning, and then he and his medical student mates would go to the place of execution, cut down the body, spirited away in a cart over cobblestones until they got into the dungeon of the medical school where they had a dissecting table and dissected the body. But eventually they outed themselves, if you like, and started to dissect them in public. And Vesalius was persecuted for many years because of it, and eventually lost his life because of it. That's a
Wow.
longer story for another time, but he was a physician to the Holy Roman Emperor and left to go to King Philip's of Spain's royal court, and events transpired which cost him his life there.
So then
So
coming.
Vesalius did discover those lymphatic system in the
Yeah,
neck,
yeah.
but
And then.
there were some ways in which that model didn't quite fit, because the distances in the brain between where the fluid left the tiny capillaries in the brain, the distance between those and the lymph glands is fairly large. Cerebral circulation is kept going by the pulsating activity of the heart. So you've got a rise and fall of systolic blood pressure up and down with every heartbeat, pulsing the blood through. But those distances could not be explained on that hydrostatic basis, and also diffusion. There was the theory that waste materials of the brain got into the lymph system through diffusion. It was inadequate to explain really how the brain drained properly. Then we had a discovery, JJ, in 2012.
Yeah, I was going to say that coming almost up to the present day, this is when we actually discover what might really be happening.
That's absolutely right. And first experiments were carried out by a group of scientists, Nedergaard, who was, I believe, was Dutch, Weber, who was German, Ida, who was Austrian, I think, but European anatomists and physiologists. And they were looking at the mouse brain. And through imaging techniques, they discovered that the cells which help to support the health of nerve cells or neurons in the brain, which cells are called astrocytes, had a very close interface with these tiny arterioles which were delivering blood into the substance of the brain. Very close connection. They had what we call our end feet, so they spread out. Astrocyte means star-like. So
Right.
you imagine all these extensions from the cell looking like a star, and they had end feet on the end of those, and they were very, very close to those blood vessels. And they also contiguously, that means physically close as well, to the neurons, the nerve cells themselves. And the astrocytes were seen to form little channels next to the nerve cells, and those channels were called aquaporin 4 channels. Aquaporin hyphen 4. There's an aquaporin 1, I think it's a protein, which forms channels. I don't know where 2 and 3 went. And then aquaporin 4. And these increase the flow of water from the neurons by a factor of 30. Now that model enabled you to make up the unexplained inadequacy of osmosis and hydrostatic pressure to drain the brain.
Right.
I hope I'm not losing your listeners so far. So, in other words, you've got a special arrangement around the nerve cells of the brain
Yeah.
by this protein channels called aquaporin 4, and these draw water out of the cells very quickly. So you've got fluid leaving the arterioles and the capillaries into the cerebrospinal fluid, which is a contained circulatory system for the brain and the spinal cord. And now, in addition to that, you've got the astrocytes clamping on to those very small capillaries and arterioles on the one hand, and then onto the nerve cells on the other. So those special channels, aquaporin, help to draw the water out of the nerve cells by a factor of 30. Think of it as a turbocharge to make sure that the fluid drains out of the brain properly.
Wow, you know, the human body never ceases to amaze me in its complexity and efficiency. And just a note about the English polymath Sir Jonathan Miller, who was mentioned earlier. He had trained in medicine, latterly specialising in neurology, before making his name in the arts as a theatre and opera director, an actor, author, television presenter and comedian. He died in 2019, having been diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And Sir Michael Parkinson was a journalist and king of the chat show hosts in the UK for many years. He'd interviewed so many of the great and good of his day, including Miller, and he died in 2023. Now, it's time to hear from our station sponsors, but we'll be back with more on the importance of the glymphatic system to brain health right after this.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 with me, JJ, the practical alchemist, and I guess you could call him my resident brain health expert, Dr. James Goodwin. Before the break, we learned how the lymphatic and glymphatic systems differ, but we've still to hear why the glymphatic system is so important to brain health. Here's James to explain just that.
Sure. With age, there is a slow degenerative process in the brain called neurodegeneration. When does it start? In some people, when they're 30 or 35, as early as that. Others, as late as maybe 55. Huge individual differences. And the structure and function of the cells of the brain start to deteriorate. And this is shown in cognitive decline, a lack of thinking capacity, particularly memory, but also volatility of the emotions, changes which result eventually in dementia. And one of the causes of dementia is a particular kind of degeneration in Alzheimer's disease. And the main theory in Alzheimer's disease is that abnormal proteins build up in the brain in and around the cells. One of them tau protein and the other one beta amyloid. Now, I believe the thinking now is that those molecules in themselves don't actually cause Alzheimer's disease. They provoke it. As those proteins build up in the brain, they set off a sequence of events which degenerates the cells of the cells of the brain massively. Now, one of the theories is that inadequate drainage of these materials is the reason why they accumulate in the brain. And people looked at the glymphatic system when it was discovered in 2012, 2013, when the paper was published, and thought to themselves, well, maybe in people with Alzheimer's disease, the glymphatic system is inadequate in them, those individuals. And as a result of that, the tau protein and the beta amyloid don't drain out of the brain in the way in which they should. So they looked at the operation of the glymphatic system. They found that, first of all, it's pulsatile. So it rises and falls, And sometimes it rises and falls more than others. And those times are at night when you're asleep. This is how intricate it is, but it's not operating all night. It's only operating in deep sleep. So you've got to go through, I would say, two or three REM cycles of sleep before you get into deep sleep. And then when you're in really deep sleep, this is when the glymphatic system really starts working and draining those brain cells of the tau and the protein and the beta amyloid.
So this really is the reason why good sleep, deep sleep, is so important when it comes
Yes.
to brain health. And people talk about how we need enough really good quality sleep, but I don't think until now I've ever really had that explained to me in terms of why we need to go into that deep sleep. So that's really interesting to me.
Sure. Now, why is it in deep sleep? Because JJ, in deep sleep, you get slow electrical waves traveling through the brain, tiny voltages which rise and fall. And these are what are called slow waves. And those slow waves are the signal to the aquaporin channels to start operating and draining the fluid out. This is one explanation of why sleep is so important for the health of the brain. There will be many other functions that sleep carries out in relation to brain health. But this is a really appropriate explanation. It fits. It's a good fit. It show, it's mechanistic. It's not just an association. Before we had an association, poor sleep contributes towards dementia. Now we have a mechanism which is
Yes,
which
exactly.
explains one of the reasons why it does that. And it's why all sleepologists and brain health scientists will tell you that you should have 7 to 8 hours of sleep in a 24-hour period.
Right. But I
Now
mean,
it's
everybody's different though, surely. But, some people need more, some people can get by on less. But then, I mean, I think back to famously how Margaret Thatcher said that she could get on very well with only 4 hours sleep a night. Do you remember that?
I do remember that.
And then, of course, she
Yes.
had problems in older age.
I
So
did.
one wonders if that was why, right?
It may have been. You're quite right about individual differences. And I always say to people, that's a population-wide piece of advice. So in other words, most people will need 7 to 8 hours of sleep in 24 hours in order to thrive. Some people may need that, but for some reason don't get it. They function on, let's say, 4 to 5 hours of sleep, but they don't thrive on it. Now, sleep changes as we age. It isn't that we need less of it. We need the same amount of sleep as a mature adult would require as we get older. It's just that the nature changes. It's harder to get down into sleep as we get older. It's easier to come out. It's then more difficult to get back down again. So you have to manage it differently. And one of the ways to do that is to nap during the day. But there's a big caveat on that. If you nap for too long, you'll make your quality and quantity of sleep far worse. Okay. So you should nap for no more than an hour. The optimum is for most people is about 40 minutes. The reason is that the one of the molecules in the blood that drives sleep is called adenosine. And if you nap for too long in the afternoon, you'll wipe out all the adenosine. It'll drive it down to zero in the brain. So that when you get to, let's say, 10 or 11 p.m. at night, there's no sleep drive. There's no molecule in the blood going into the brain to tell us to feel sleepy and to get to sleep. Why? Because you've wrecked it by oversleeping in the afternoon. If I nap in the afternoon, which I sometimes do, I'll put the alarm on for 40 minutes to wake myself up, because otherwise I know that if I sleep for an hour, 2 hours, even 3 hours in the afternoon, I'm going to be wide awake at 10 and 11 o'clock at night. And therefore, I'm not going to get the depth of sleep that I need to maintain the health of my brain.
And I'm thinking as well of things like jet lag, and you do wreck your sleeping patterns when you travel around the world and you move into different time zones. When you have to get up at morning in the time zone that you're in, but it's maybe late evening where you've come from, and it just completely ruins your sleep patterns, doesn't it? And that can't be that helpful or that healthy.
Advice is given about sleep, and it's often dissociated from our biological clocks. So it's very important that we keep our daily rhythms of all kinds tuned into our biological clocks. And you can wreck them by traveling outside of your time zone. So the body thinks that it's 10 o'clock at night, but if you're on the eastern seaboard of America, it's only 5 p.m. in the afternoon. So you've got in some way to resynchronize that very quickly. I do it by adopting the time zone that I'm in very, very quickly. So set your alarm for, let's say, 7 a.m. in the morning, get up, go outside, have a brief walk, and get 10 hours of sunlight or daylight into your eyes as soon as you possibly can when 2 feet hit the tarmac, so that you're actually moving the hands on the clock
So
to
that your
the time
body,
zone in which you're in.
so that your body starts to adapt to the biological rhythm and
I cheat
the
whenever I
circadian
go to,
rhythms.
so I cheat whenever I go to the United States. I buy 2 bottles of melatonin, which are tiny white tablets.
I
And
was
I'll
going to
tell
come on
you,
to yeah, I was going to
it's a
come on to talking
natural
about melatonin.
hormone. It's a natural hormone which you can only get on prescription here in Britain. It's one of our many silly health rules. America has them as well, don't get me wrong. They have things you can't get in America that we can get easily here. But you can buy melatonin in the US, and I bring it back a couple of bottles so that when I get back, an hour before I go to bed, I just pop a tablet. That increases the amount of melatonin. That tells the brain it's time to sleep.
I
It
know.
works. And if ever I think I'm not going to sleep well, I cheat for a second time. Even when I'm not jet lagged, I'll take a melatonin. Oh, it's marvelous. And it's a natural molecule. The body recognizes it, knows exactly what to do with it.
See, this is
It's
why I
not a
was,
drug.
yeah, this is why I was going to ask you about it, because I know that people have great results taking melatonin if they need to sleep properly. But then I'm thinking, well, but does that have a negative effect? But obviously not, because it's a natural molecule, and it will just help us reset. So that sounds like perfect. Is it only available on prescription here in the UK?
Well, that's my understanding. Times may have changed.
Yeah,
I
no, I think you might be right. Yeah, I think you might be right.
think it is only available on prescription. The usual British fears about don't let people take their healthcare into their own hands got to be dictated by a doctor. Doctors know best and all the rest of it.
Let's get started on that one. Let me.
No, we mustn't. And I've got high regard for the medical profession, don't get me wrong. In fact, I've got the highest regard for medical people who've got a self-effacing sense of humour about themselves. And I remember one of my favourite doctors, he was my men's health consultant in London. And he said, James, what you have to realise is medicine proceeds funeral by funeral.
Yeah, great.
He was self-facing about medicine, and that was because he had some very advanced ideas about men's hormonal lives, which were contrary to medical orthodoxy and dogma.
And we've talked about melatonin as a way to get a good night's sleep, but there are other things as well that one can take. Valerian root, for example, is something which I have taken in the past, which you can get without prescription, and make an infusion, a tea with that. And I find that that does help. And I know that for myself, my sleeping patterns have changed as I've got older.
They will.
And it's not as easy for me to get to sleep now that I'm older. I've noticed
you're perfectly
that.
Normal, JJ.
Yeah, well, thank you. No, not everybody will say that, but thank you very much. But yeah, I mean, I have noticed that. It's really interesting. And then, of course, you know, the other day I bought a bath salt. It's bath salts infused with lavender and valerian and something else and something else. But Epsom salts, I think, with those ingredients in there, so that you can have a relaxing hot or warm bath before you go to bed with all these lovely herbs infusing. And that can help as well. But I was just really fascinating to find that there is a glymphatic system and how important that is for our brain health and how sleep is so key to allowing it to work. Yes, well, we'll hear more about the importance of sleep for the brain to stay healthy shortly. First, it's time for another short break to hear from our sponsors. No sleeping, enjoy the break. And I'll be back with James right after this.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
And of course, you're listening to Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio station. I'm JJ, the practical alchemist, and my guest today is Dr. James Goodwin. We're talking about the glymphatic system. That's lymphatic with a G at the beginning. And before the break, I was saying how extraordinary it is to only recently discover this system that's so important for brain health. Here's James again.
It is. We've evolved as humans over 1.5 million years. And until Neolithic times, we were in perfect concert with nature. Everything that evolved in the human body was there for a reason. In other words, it was highly selected. So it's the result of a selection pressure. So if there's a drought, all those individuals that can withstand lack of water the most survive, and they pass that on in their genes or just in their DNA. Because we now know that it's not just genes you pass on, it's any alterations in DNA. That
all kinds of things, yeah.
They're called epigenetics. So you've got genetics in the environment, selection pressures, modifying the human frame for the purposes of survival. And now we know there are epigenetic pressures as well. I sympathize with you greatly about there are many different answers to the 20th century problem and 21st century problem of sleeplessness.
Yeah.
And I write about that in my book.
You do. You do indeed. Supercharge Your Brain. Exactly. And the other thing.
People, one more thing is to go to the Global Council on Brain Health. Just type that into Google. You'll get on their landing page, click reports, and then there's one on sleep there.
Great, yeah.
I can talk to you all day about the people who wrote that. I was there when they wrote it.
Yeah, brilliant. That's brilliant and great advice if anybody's interested. But the one thing that I was just going to ask you about as well, but of course I think I know the answer to that. You know, a lot of people work night shifts, and I used to when I was younger. When I was working in television, because, you know, news didn't stop. And that's what I was working on at the time. And I found it incredibly detrimental to my health. And I know a lot of people do. And I think, and you may know better than me, I think it's because you don't get a proper sleep during the day, or it's very difficult to get a proper deep sleep during the day.
Yes.
Is that something that you know anything about?
The extent to which working shifts harms you depends upon the shift cycle.
Yeah.
But essentially, all non-normal routine shift patterns desynchronize the natural body cycles from their normal resting position to something contrived.
Mm.
And you're right, it's been found that even if you had a benign shift system, that is still detrimental to their body's health. No such thing as good shift working. People become adjusted to it psychologically, and to some extent their bodies can settle to this unnatural nighttime activity. I'm trying to remember the name of the biologist who wrote The Naked Ape, Desmond Morris.
Desmond Morris, yeah.
Yeah, mm. He became an artist. Mm-hmm. I believe he lives somewhere isolated, away from the humdrum of normal life, and paints at night. So he's completely nocturnal, and he's changed his... Now, there are huge individual differences. Some people can get away with it, some people can't. I'll give you the example of one of my brother-in-law's children, ex-brother-in-law's children, and he was working nights for the Nissan car company. They lived in the United States. And he had a quite a large paunch, what we'd describe as a beer belly. And he said, I've tried everything. I go to the gym. I cut down on my diet. I exercise. I do everything they say you should do. Can't shift it. It took him 8 years to convince Nissan to come off the night shift to go on the day shift. Of course, everybody wants to do that. Within 3 months of being on the day shift, it disappeared.
Yeah.
Astonishing.
Well, I've seen a correlation that myself, you know, not just with me, and not to that extent, but with other people as well. And similar to your ex-brother-in-law's experience, when I said I had to stop doing night shifts, there was, you know, all hell let loose. It's just like, well, why? Why would you do that? Well, because it's making me ill. And that didn't go down well at all, because you can't get people who will do it.
No,
yeah.
I can see that. And, I remember when I was in the army, I was an infantry officer. We had one CO, and we were up against the Russian army in the Cold War. People forget how intense that was.
Yeah.
So he said, right, for 3 months, we're going to go on nights. So the whole battalion did nothing but train at night. We were experts at it. And in those days, night vision technology wasn't like it is today, where many soldiers, you know, are given the glasses, thermal and ambient light-enhancing glasses and night sights. So we all became experts at operating by night. And when we have these big operations and maneuvers in Germany in the Cold War, we were the best, because we trained for 3 months. But you know what? It made me feel ill, even at a young age. I just felt one below the whole time.
Yeah, absolutely. And for some people, it's not just one below, it's quite a few below. And I don't know whether taking something like melatonin for sleep during the day would even help, but it's just very interesting how much sleep affects us physically. It's extraordinary, I think. And I think I'm only just realizing at this late age, this old age, how important sleep is, because when you're young, you don't really pay attention to it, do you?
There was a famous evolutionary biologist, whose name I forget, who said, if sleep doesn't provide benefits, then evolution made a pretty serious mistake.
Good point. And I think...
To keep us unconscious for a third of the day, that must have made a pretty serious... error. And it's all about synchronizing us into day and night. And modern life desynchronizes us not just on sleep, but virtually on everything else.
Yeah.
Just on our activity patterns.
Yeah.
Is one. The amount of sunlight we get.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. The amount of noise that we hear.
Yeah.
And not hear. You know, that for me, as I'm honest with myself, are you on your telephone looking at your blue light? screen late at night. It's almost one fast sleep experiment, sleep deprivation experiment.
Mm. Why?
Under the Helsinki Treaty of Human Rights, one of the things you can't do is deprive people of sleep.
No, exactly. Yeah, absolutely. It's torture. Like torture. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is torture. And when I used to talk to the Special Air Service, they have an escape and evasion phase. It's part of their selection process for who gets in.
Mm-hmm.
One of the techniques they use is sleep deprivation, because within 24 hours of being sleep deprived, you start to wobble.
Yeah.
Very badly. It's very naughty to deprive people of sleep.
Well, that's an understatement, I think. And on that note, I think we should wind this up. So, you know, fascinating as ever. Thank you so much for telling us about this. I had not heard of it before. I'm sure that our listeners will not have heard of it before. And it's really interesting to know that there is such a thing and that we do well to make sure that it works efficiently. And, you know, that sounds like getting a good night's sleep, a restorative sleep is the answer. So thanks once again for coming on the show and enlightening us as ever.
Thank you very much, JJ. It's always a pleasure to be on your show.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
So there you are. I hope you learned something like I did. Make sure we all get a good night's sleep, not just so that we wake up refreshed, but also so that we allow our brains to flush out its waste effectively. For me, knowing that there is a glymphatic system, how it works and why it's important, gives me so much more impetus to prioritise a good sleep. It really isn't something that we should be just dreaming about. And that's about all we have time for today. No plant of the day again, but I mentioned the usual herbal suspects earlier when it comes to good sleep. I might add a couple of medicinal mushrooms into the mix there too. Reishi can help ease stress and promote sleep, and lion's mane can calm anxiety. It's also great to help improve cognition too. A great brain booster. You can find out more about me and my work at my website, thepracticalalchemist.uk, and do check out my YouTube channel, Alternatively Speaking. And if you're interested in my energy work, do head along to safehavenhealing.uk. You'll find out all about what that entails and how it can help you, both with your health and well-being, and also generally to help you to move forward in your life in the way that you want to. For now, though, thank you for listening. Join me next time for more great guests and more practical alchemy. Until then, as ever, is goodbye from me and that nightingale.